And we are off and running.
Okay. Wow. Is this the first one you've done in the new year?
Technically, we recorded some before the new year, but
yeah.
This is the first one we've recorded in the new year because we try to do them in advance. And also, your January is a hot mess.
Wow. This is cool. So, yeah, first for 2023.
So happy new year. Yeah, but happy by the time you guys listen to this, it'll be the end of January.
Happy February, maybe.
Happy February.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So, hello and welcome to Start Trek, the Star Trek Next Generation Rewatch podcast with myself, Dave, longtime fan, and my wife, Amara, newcomer to Star Trek.
Yo.
Where we watch old TNG episodes and compare notes. And today's episode is season one, episode 12, The Big Goodbye.
AKA, just a way for people to dress in 1940s garb.
It was very period specific. Yes.
Yes. The costume department was just like, no more spandex. Or the actors were just like, no more spandex this week, goddammit.
So, you know, they actually won, they got an Emmy nomination for best costume in a series for this episode.
I can see why. I have a lot of comments about the costuming.
And they won.
Also can see why.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
I kept like looking because I was like, oh, are they going to use the wrong kind of hat? Oh, and they didn't. They had like period accurate hats and stuff. I was very impressed.
And also period specific accents from Data.
We'll get into that.
Okay. So this episode was originally aired January 11th, 1988. As I mentioned, it's the 12th episode in the first season. It was the writing credit goes to Tracy Torme, who I believe also received a writing credit for Haven. And actually, the idea of the whole like periodicity of the 1940s, I think, was pitched by Gene Roddenberry. So she gave credit to Gene for that situation.
Cool.
The original director was slated to be Rob Bowman. But it actually wound up going to a guy named Joe Scanlon, who directed a couple other TNG episodes in the first and second series. And Rob Bowman actually went on to direct the next episode, Data Lore, which I'm very excited about.
Oh, yeah. You have a shirt that says Trust Data, Not Lore.
Yes.
And I don't know what it is, but you were really excited. I got it for you for Christmas a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And you were very excited by it.
I love that shirt.
I don't know what it means.
You'll find out. Anyways. Hooray. So today's episode, The Big Goodbye. We'll get into it, but this is the first one to really explore the holodeck.
Yes, and answered a lot of my NC-17 related questions, honestly.
Yeah, well, don't hang on to those answers because they change.
Oh, great. Okay.
Anyways, so we open up this episode with a little bit different. Instead of getting a Picard log, this time we have a Riker log who's setting the scene for us. And he reveals that the Enterprise is about to make brief contact with a race known as the Haradans, who I guess they've had some diplomatic, or the Federation has had some diplomatic contact with this kind of insectoid race known as the Haradans. But it's always gone poorly, largely because the Haradans are really sticklers for protocol and pronunciation, and frankly, other people have just fouled it up in the past. So yeah, they're quite particular about this, and Picard has been working on his greeting for the Haradans quite diligently.
So Dave, I'll be honest, I fell through quite a few plot holes in this episode.
Let's hear it. All right.
Okay, so here's the first and probably biggest one throughout the entirety of the episode.
Yeah.
All right, so they have the communicators, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And then they also have Data,
yes,
who's able, and we see this again later on in the episode, he can mimic people's voices, and we've seen this in preceding episodes.
Yeah.
So Data is able to like do stuff perfectly. Why doesn't he just learn the greeting and imitate Picard?
That is a brilliant idea.
Like, I immediately was just like, why is this a problem? And then also Troy knows how to do it. So I'm like, why can't Troy do it?
Yeah.
And then later on, it's revealed it's got to be the superior officer. So again, I go back to my first thing, which is just have it pre-recorded either by Data or Picard. Like,
yeah,
can't he just record it several times, like Picard himself? Or if that doesn't work, have Data do a really awesome impression because they don't do the screen-to-screen thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a great point. I didn't even think about that. You got Picard diligently practicing, and Troy in one of the first scenes is like correcting his pronunciation, all this stuff. Yeah, just have Data do it flawlessly.
Yeah.
Or have Data do like a whole conversation in the Haradan language, because he can certainly do that.
Exactly. I'm like, I don't understand this plot, and thank God it's the secondary one, because I was like, this is useless. Like, are they going to be like at the end, like, oh, we should have used Data? Like, I really thought that was going to be the reveal at the end.
Yeah.
Like, and Data was going to save the day by mimicking Picard.
Yeah, because he can do a flawless Picard.
Exactly. So that was very confusing.
Yeah.
And then also, I did relate to Picard's struggles because as someone who did read a lot, and again, as I've mentioned, limited exposure, I honestly, y'all, thought that the word debris was pronounced Debris until I was 18. 18. And someone finally corrected me.
Yeah. And I think over the course of our relationship, you've had a number of these.
Oh, so many of those.
I don't remember. Some of them are really good. I don't remember any, unfortunately, right now.
Ha.
Yeah. But just great. Like, oh, you obviously have not heard that word said before.
So
you've only read
times.
It. Yeah, that's
like,
pretty
there
great.
Are so, oh, yeah. There's just so many different words I've only ever read. And then when I say it aloud, people are like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is like really embarrassing.
Take
this is another one.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize people were jokingly in high school saying hyperbole. I thought it was hyperbole.
Okay.
And I found out in college it's hyperbole.
So they kept you going with hyperbole?
Right. And the worst part was everyone thought I was just like being ridiculous in college. So they're like, oh, ha ha, Mara's intentionally mispronouncing hyperbole.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
Just an idiot.
That sounds like a futuristic football game. Like, let's go to the Hyper Bowl.
Where's the accent mark? I still maintain that I was wrong.
That's amazing.
But yeah, so hyperbole. Ooh, I'm sorry. Idaho's not that fancy.
So we do have this first scene where Troy, which we're talking about now, where Troy is like correcting or helping Picard through his pronunciation. And Picard says he's not very good at languages. He's not very good at spelling. You know, he spells knight with an N, not with a K, which I totally relate to. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, we're just, both Amara and I are not that great at languages.
Yeah, neither of us have an aptitude. My brother, God bless him. I say this in like the Southern way, bless his heart.
Yeah.
Like, can speak like five languages or something.
Yeah.
I did not get that talent.
Yeah.
My Spanish is terrible.
Yeah, I lived in Quebec for like 5 years, 6 years, and I could barely speak any French at all. You know?
Yeah. So. My French is at the level of I had a French teacher tell me like a very slow kindergartner.
Yeah.
And I was like, that feels politically incorrect and hurtful at the same time.
Like, my French is designed to provoke empathy. Right?
Yeah. It's basically like everyone will feel bad for you. So they will actually try to speak French to you very slowly.
So we
relate.
Yes.
Okay. In a super hyperbole. In a super hyperbole way.
Hyperbole way. Nice. So Troy, like, seeing how stressed out Picard is over this pronunciation attempt, she suggests, as the counselor, again, psychological, not legal, to take a break and maybe check out the new upgraded holodeck.
Right. And at this point, I'm like, okay, this seems like a really poor choice. Like, wasn't Troy... So the last episode, obviously her mom was a nightmare. So I get that she's trying to get like good points with the captain, right?
Yeah.
But Troy, as someone who personally, Dave, I don't know if you know this, but I actually have a doctorate in procrastination.
I was unaware.
Actually, no, I don't yet. I haven't filled out the final paperwork, but I'm pretty close.
Is that from the School of Life?
Yeah, from the School of Light Knocks. We never got to the Hard Knocks because, I mean, it's just more work and you're going to go harder. Anyway, the very last thing he needs to do right now is get distracted.
Yeah.
Like, he needs to practice. This is like do or die time to try to get together with this Haradaz or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I totally am in my phonetic spelling field. This is just furthering my point. It's time to focus on the wavy language lines that she's talking about. This isn't time to go play in the holodeck.
Yeah,
and I feel like she's just like, well, I gotta appease you by letting you do what you really want to do because my mom was such a nightmare in the last episode.
That's an interesting take. I mean, I would also say, you know, if you're in this kind of situation where you've got this deadline, but like your mind is just like closing down because you've been working too, just like do some exercise or something. Do something where the time is limited,
right?
Not like something you really enjoy and distract you for a long period of time.
I would also say... counter or a secondary point, which I agree with you on that. Did they not just leave a spa planet behind?
Yeah.
Like, Picard literally just canceled their vacation at a spa planet after Troy's betrothed jumped ship to join some space race leprosy ridden Farrah Fawcett people and thought that was distraction enough to be like, all right, guys, you know what? We don't need leave after all. And he was kind of a dick and canceled it for everyone, like without getting anyone's input. And now all of a sudden he needs a space outing.
Yeah.
What the fudge?
But it turns out there's some new program that he's really into about Dixon Hill, which turns out to be like a 1940s private eye, kind of Dick Tracy type of character.
You know what Tasha is probably into? Hot stone massage. So cool. Thanks.
So he goes down to the new holodeck and proceeds to like talk to the little command council, and he requests a setting for 1941 in the period AD, which suggests that maybe he made a mistake about this in the past, in San Francisco with the Dixon Hill name. So the computer sets up this whole program for him.
Yeah. And again, I'm like, ooh, a holodeck. Okay. And I don't mean to harp on this point, but like, you know what else is, and I'm quoting here, I don't remember if it's Troy or Picard who says it, but they say, highly enjoyable when used for games and recreation.
Yeah.
A spa full of gorgeous people who want to give you a massage and spa services for free.
Yeah.
Like, pretty sure.
Like that Haven planet they were just at?
Yes, that thing just left. Yeah. Tasha and Worf have had a really particularly stressful couple of days. Them in particular, with Tasha being in that damn penalty box.
Oh, yeah.
And Worf getting fired at and like, you know, just wharfing out.
Wharfing out.
Yeah. And so like, you know, maybe a democracy would be good here. Like we all take a vote, but no, Picard's got to go to his 1940s era detective thing. That's only good for him. Selfish, bad leadership.
That actually, it's a good point. Worf and Wes were just recently killed. Right?
Yes, exactly.
By animal pig things.
They may want to go to, I don't know, a spa.
I guess you could argue that they have already done this. We're only seeing Picard's narrative, right? So maybe they've already gone, maybe not to the new upgraded holodeck, but they've had some.
I mean, I hope so, because Picard's brain is like, spa day for everyone or detective fantasy scenario for me. Detective day! That's a no-brainer.
So Picard goes into the simulation and we see this kind of like a dingy detective dingy like office building where you have this detective's office where the name on the door says Dixon Hill, private investigator. And he goes into the private investigator's office, which is supposed to be like his office because he's playing the Dixon Hill part. And he sees a receptionist who immediately makes fun of his quote threads.
Yeah.
So this is interesting because they don't like, they recognize that he's wearing the Starfleet uniform that looks weird and they kind of make fun of him. But we don't see this in later episodes.
Oh.
Like later episodes, the holodeck people just kind of like accept however you're dressed is fine.
The holodeck stuff is so inconsistent, Dave. From like what I saw based off of what you told me in the first two episodes to this episode, I was like, none of this. Again, there's a lot of plot holes in this episode.
Oh yeah, no, it's kind of just one big Swiss cheese of an episode.
True.
I didn't think about that first one of just get Data to mimic Picard and do the intro.
I just like I'm very like flummoxed by like why like this episode should have been done in 5 seconds.
Picard enters into his, I guess he went into the first outer office where the receptionist tells him there's a lady waiting for you who's got nice legs inside of his inner office. And he goes into his inner private eyes office and we see this woman wrapped in like a fox kind of shawl.
Well, full stop. So first off, his secretary's like just like classic like Ford, like, hi there, Mr. Texiano, his name is. And first off,
that was a good impression.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
I think we found your like best impression today.
My Anna Delvey was really good.
Yeah.
Yapa. All right. Well, anyway, I just like, there's a brawn outside. She's got some real nice legs.
Yeah.
And Picard looks at his own legs. And she's no, not yours, Dilly, or something. And it's like, I really enjoyed that Picard's like, I do have nice calves. Yes. Thank you, random hologram lady, for noticing.
Yeah, it's hard to tell in these pants, but obviously
like
it shines through.
Spandex does not flatter my calves, but it's true. And also, I just want to point out that in his wildest fantasy, he plays a guy who's a detective, which was known as a private dick at the time, named Dixon. So he's Dick Dick. Cool.
Private Dick Squared.
He's Detective Dick, or Dick Dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is something I can never really understand. I love Picard. He's a big childhood hero of mine. I don't get this whole era, Private Dick, Maltese Falcon, like that never really resonated with me. And the same with like Westerns, like that setting. I just never found it appealing. But you know, whatever, to each his own. I just find it interesting that so many people find it interesting, I guess.
First off, we should maybe say like which types of people find it interesting because I don't know. As a lady, I can just say that the idea of hearkening back to a time where we had brassieres that were like really pointy and metal and like dug into your skin and literally like made you bleed and you didn't really have that many rights and you were the property of your husband doesn't sound fun.
And that sounds like most of history.
Yeah, no, really. Things haven't been great, ladies, for a while. We don't want to hearken back to earlier times. Anyone who has some sort of idea about going back to like when you could be a princess or a queen needs to read more history. It's terrible. And then also just plumbing's important. I think plumbing's wonderful creation. Yeah. So anytime without plumbing, no thanks.
And also the absence of lead in your plumbing.
Oh, or lice. Yeah. Just like, you know, having to deal with lice all the time. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah, anyway. So a lot of things that we should love about living today.
So he goes in. to his inner office and sees the lady with the nice legs. Oh, that was a terrible accent.
Nice legs.
As you said. And she's wrapped up in, like, she's got, like, the shawl on. She's got a cigarette, like, trying to be, like, the 1940s glamorous kind of look. And Picard comes in and right off the way to explain his outfit. He says, I lost a bet. Yeah, she was.
Which she takes. And I'm like, okay, lady from the 40s, like, where spandex hasn't been created yet.
Yeah.
You're just really, like, not impressed by the stretchy material. I'd be like, hell yeah. I'm sorry. Does this mean I don't have to wear wires digging into my rib cage anymore?
So she goes off to the window to look all dark and mysterious and smoking and says that basically she needs help. Someone is trying to kill her. Bum, bum, bum. And that's the setup for the grand mystery. And then we get our usual intro credits for Star Trek.
Also, why is it that in Picard's holodeck vision, it's like a shitty office? Can you just have like a nice detective agency? Why is that a trope?
I guess.
Like Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or, you know what? What's her name? The Murder She Wrote lady. She's awesome.
Yeah.
Why can't you just have like a nice little airy office with a bunch of like flowery cushions and stuff?
I guess you could maybe hypothesize that because he's the captain of a galaxy class starship, everything he's got is super nice. So
he wants,
like,
to slum it.
Yeah, it's like a little adventure outside your usual surroundings.
Okay,
but I don't know. You know,
weird.
We're speculating on a somewhat inconsistent aspect.
On a fictional,
character.
Fictional, like, yeah. Whoa! It's like Inception speculation.
Yeah.
Oh, and for those of you who dislike Wesley, you'll be happy to know that he has less than 5 minutes of screen time in this episode.
So when we return, Picard reveals that Dixon Hill has been a childhood interest of his. He really likes this kind of hard-bitten detective novel.
Just like Sherlock Holmes-y type stuff, right?
And so the computer-generated lady is explaining her problem that someone's trying to kill her. She thinks maybe it could be a husband or a business partner or something like that. Or it could be Cyrus Redblock.
And doesn't Picard say, or it could be a lover?
He does suggest that possibility.
And it's like,
too.
Picard! My goodness!
So they negotiate a fee for $20 a day plus expenses. Mm-hmm. And then Picard says, you know, he's going to consider it instead of accepting right away. And she gives him a nice kiss on the cheek, or very close to his lips, basically his upper lip, as well as a C note that she stuffs into his shirt, which I thought was a nice touch.
Yeah. No, she extracts it from her bra. At first, I was like, wait, what? And it's buried in there, guys.
Yeah.
I don't know. Ladies out there who've ever, you know, had an evening at a club where you've had to tuck in your ID, you don't have to dig that far generally. Like, I don't know where she's digging, but it's pretty far in that burr.
Yeah,
so
gives him a warm C note.
What's a C note?
$100 bill.
Oh, wow. Ladies got C notes in her bra in the 40s.
Century? Like, that's where, I'm guessing that's where it comes from. And then she gives him this kiss on the side of his mouth, and he gets a whole bunch of lipstick right on his cheek. And then as she's leaving, she takes a card of his, which I thought was kind of weird.
That's stupid. How'd she get there in the first place without the card?
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Picard sits down at his desk, and as he's sitting there kind of contemplating the situation, he hears some, like, car horns behind him in the street. And so he turns around and looks out the window and sees, like, these old 1940s cars driving around, and it's really cool. And I guess at this point, he decides, that's enough relaxation. I got $100 and a kiss. I'm out. And so he leaves. He calls for the holodeck exit and walks out.
Yes. Right. And a couple things. So previously we've seen in Star Trek, this just irritated me. Yeah. They're like, oh, we're all like angrily vegan, essentially, which is cool.
And Oh, yeah.
Vegans, no shade. I think it's awesome. I tried to do it for a while and I just didn't have the like fortitude. And I think it's like pretty freaking awesome when you do it. However, Star Trek's like very judgmentally angrily vegan. And it's like in Picard's fantasy, this lady's wearing like a fox fur and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And like smooching. And I'm like, oh, okay. So just to be clear, it's like we're okay with fur related hologram stuff. Yeah. But like in reality, no fur related stuff. And we're going to cast aspersions on other species who use fur as clothing.
Yeah, I think that's totally consistent because you can simulate meat and eat it from the replicator. So you can simulate the fur in the holodeck or simulate it or replicate it and make a clothing out of it. It's just,
I just think that's weird to have in your like imaginary space, you know? Like if you're trying to be like holier than thou and be like, ah, oh, we don't use any sort of animal products, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like in your holograph space, people are dressed in fox furs. It's like,
yeah, I mean, I don't see it because it's like period specific and you're not actually killing animals. So.
Okay, I guess so. But I mean, there's also period specific outfits that don't involve fur.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of those in this one too, like the suits.
That's true.
Yeah.
Touche. All right. My complaint is taken back.
So as Picard leaves, the holodeck keeps running, yes. Which is kind of weird. And this guy like walks in looking for Dixon Hill.
And I'm so confused, Dave, because you told me like the first time you're like, okay, matter can't exit. Because I said, what if like the very first episode, I was all pumped because I'm like, Wesley fell in brackish water, brain amoeba, dead, woo, let's go. Obviously, that hasn't happened. Or if it is, it's going to take 5-6 seasons or something, right?
Yeah.
So you were like, no, the matter goes away. But then Wesley had emerged and he was all soaking wet from like 20. So this time Picard leaves and he still has lipstick on him.
Yep.
So you can leave with matter from the holodeck.
In season one, apparently.
Okay. So it's confusing. I don't understand.
Because I think here they're still working out the rules for it.
Okay.
There's another one or two rules that we'll run into that turn out to not be the case later on. But like Picard, as he leaves, he's got lipstick on his face and he's walking through the hallways of the Enterprise.
Yeah.
And you see some ensigns like, ooh, my Picard. He gets some action. But in later episodes, it erases once you leave the holodeck.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Oh, and also I wanted to make note that he was like flirtatious with the flirty woman, which he normally isn't. So I'm like, aha. So that's what made me think the holodeck could be a bit more racy because we were talking about that previously.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I was like, is this a place where the teenagers go? Because no one seems to be dropping hats and you got to drop hats somehow. Get that dropping hat steam out.
So for some reason, I guess this topic isn't really broached as far as I remember in The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. But in Deep Space Nine, which is like takes place on a space station, there's what are called holo suites.
Ooh.
And it's kind of implied that those are used more for sexual recreation, let's say.
Well, we already saw Riker watching ladies poorly play the harp while dressed in Caesar's Palace outfits from like circa 1990. So we know something's going on. It's implied.
Our next scene is Picard calling a conference with his senior staff in the conference room. And when I first started watching this scene, I mean, it's been many years since I've seen this episode. For a second, I thought he had called this conference basically just to talk about his time in the holodeck.
Yeah, me too. And I was like, okay, cool. He's like bragging that they didn't get to go to the spa planet.
And he's still got like lipstick on his face when he's doing it. And also, I don't know, this was a little weird to me that the acoustics in that conference room sounded off. I don't know if you noticed that.
I didn't notice that. Yeah. I just noticed that he struggled with coming up with the word for city block. And it's like... Dude, the first episode of this entire series, you destroyed blocks upon blocks of the Bandy civilization.
Oh, no, that was the aliens. That wasn't him.
Oh, that wasn't him. Okay, well, you watched it happen. I'm pretty sure you know what a block is.
Yeah.
Like, block. why is that so hard? So that was kind of weird.
So he does tell his senior staff, like, this was really cool. He wants to go again, but this time he's going to dress properly. And then he invites Dr. Crusher to come with him.
Mm-hmm.
He also invites a 20th century historian dude that they happen to have on the ship. I think his name is Waylon.
Whoa. Oh, did you have... I'm passing some stuff,
y'all. I'm sorry. Wait, did you have thoughts?
Yeah. Well, first off, so... Crusher's like, oh my God, that sounds so fascinating.
Yeah.
And she like stands up and she goes over and wipes off the lipstick.
Oh yeah.
Off of his lips. Yeah. Now guys, I know about you. I've had several bosses. I've never had a boss come up to my face and wipe my lipstick off and it has sometimes been askew.
Yeah.
No one's done that. And if they had, I would have been like, what the damn hell?
Well, I guess it'd be the opposite, right? It'd be like you wiping the lipstick off your boss's face.
Likewise. Yeah. Never done that? No, never would do that.
That's a weird thing
that
to do.
That would be
to
a what the damn hell. I'd say, you got something on your face right there. Point to it. That's what you do in, you know,
or
the work world.
Even better, you don't say anything because it's hilarious.
It is hilarious. Yeah, if you don't like your boss, you don't say anything, obviously, right?
Yeah.
So no, she goes up and she like wipes it off all tenderly like, and I'm like, did we miss an episode? Like, did they actually get together? Because this definitely was like a very like... very romantic-y type gesture. And I was like, they're definitely like, Mackin, did something happen? Did I miss a scene?
So it's a little bit nebulous, I guess, at this point. I don't want to give anything away, let's say. Yeah.
But yeah, so then he invites Crusher to come with him and she's like, yay, date. Yeah. And like all excited, and he's just like, oh, and also Mr. Waylon.
Yeah,
and she's just like, son of a bitch. and she actually like rolls her eyes or something.
Oh yeah. She doesn't look happy about this.
She's very upset about it visibly, and it's like, oh, three's not a date.
And Picard also says, you know, when that woman kissed me, it was so... And Crusher offers the word real, and Picard says, no, exciting. But you see now, I think it's minute 1026, Riker gets super excited by the possibility of making out with some holodeck women.
Oh, he's so excited. He's leering like to himself.
Oh, yeah. And it's great. It's pretty amazing.
If you could leer into your imagination, he's doing it.
He's like, wow, now I don't have to use those harp-playing women with the Caesar's Palace dresses anymore.
Yeah. And Waylon sounds cool, if for no other reason than he annoys Crusher. So
it turns out, actually, the whole meeting was not to go over Picard's brief vacation. It was to talk about the Haradan meeting that's coming up. And this turns out to be like, they could have done this over email. It was just like, Riker gives a brief summary and says like, yeah, don't screw this up. Otherwise, they'll be mad. Everyone's like, okay, cool.
Oh, and also, again, Wesley and his mother of the year, Data says like, oh, so there were automobiles. When Picard's discussing like what all the stuff he saw, and Data's like, oh my god, automobiles. And Wesley's like, what's that? And Data says, while looking into Wesley's eyes, that cars were involved in teenage mating rituals.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Data, don't make eye contact with the underage dude in the room while you say that. And his mother's right there. And his mother just is like, oh, too busy thinking about my date in the holodeck. Like, no one has any problem with that. It's just HR violations all around, Dave.
So Data is also intrigued by this whole Dixon Hill thing. And as he's talking to Geordi, he kind of compares him to Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
And so Data's starting to get a little bit excited. He goes to the computer in his own time and he reads basically all available information about Dixon Hill to prepare.
Yes. And he makes a big error here, guys. You know what it is?
What?
I mean, I know this is, they didn't know this in the late 80s. He doesn't specifically say that he wants like all of the text that was like written by the author of Dixon Hill.
Canonical.
He says request all text about Dixon Hill.
Yeah.
You guys, that means he's got access to the fanfic. And if it's anything like the Riker and Q fanfic, Data's about to have a very warped perception of what's going on with this detective Dick.
Okay.
His knowledge is going to be like littered with poorly written like sexual escapades about this like funky 40s detective.
Yeah, I guess. This is all pre-internet, right? Like they wouldn't have anticipated.
So they would have anticipated the fact that saying like all Data would be like all the things.
Yeah.
So, and also I was happy because I'm like, oh, is Data Sherlock Holmes going to come back? Because that was one of my favorite things we've seen so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Brent Spiner has something else in mind here.
He does, which is great. But again, I just was really hoping there'd be some deviation where he's just like, remember that time you got stuck with that orgy with eight broads? And Picard would be like, what?
Not now, Mr. Data.
He'd be like, no, it's in that one thing from the internet archives. But no, I guess that wasn't a thing in the 80s.
So in our next scene, Picard is informing us that we're about 11 hours away from the Haradan kind of meeting. And he's ready to go. He just decides to have this little break in the holodeck. So he waits for the 20th century historian Waylon, I believe, as well as Dr. Crusher, who's going to turn up with them and join them shortly. So they enter in, and now they're period specific costume, right? So Picard has like the PI hat. He's got, I believe that's like a duster or some other coat. And Data decides to make an appearance and join them. And Data's got his suit and his hat. He's ready to go, right? So they're all decked out for a trip on the holodeck.
Also, I'm perplexed by this because is Picard seriously having a midlife crisis or something? They're 11 hours away.
Yeah.
He's not really doing great with the pronunciation from what we saw previously.
Yeah.
And is it because of the whole like destruction of that Ferengi ship a couple episodes ago? And he's like trying to come to grips with it in his own special Picard way. And he's got like destruction amnesia. And now he's like playing detective instead of preparing for diplomatic mission and like forcing Riker to be in control, despite the fact that Riker totally just failed a test of moral aptitude in like two episodes ago.
Yeah.
What's going on with the character development here, Dave? Because it's all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I would, if I'm 11 hours away from something, I might take a nap. That's like a whole day.
I would take a nap and also not trust my second in command who just failed horribly with godlike powers.
Well, I'm hoping, or I think he's anticipating being done with the holodeck in like 2 hours.
Maybe not an open-ended thing is a good idea at this point.
I guess they didn't, like they assume that they can leave anytime they want.
I guess so, but it's also like very immersive. So maybe you get swept up and you don't know the time or whatever. I don't know. But the point is, what are you doing, Picard?
So they walk into the sim and they're walking into this. It looks kind of like maybe a Chicago or New York style street with these 1940s cars. And they're just walking around and basically all three of them, Waylon, Picard and Data, are just like dazed and confused, just staring at everything like tourists. Right.
Right. And also, I had another question. This Mr. Waylon fellow.
Yeah.
Is it necessary to have a 20th century historian aboard this ship?
Yeah.
What year is this, Dave?
2040 something.
Oh, it's 2040?
Yeah.
Oh,
24th century.
I thought it was like...
Maybe 2300.
Oh, so it's not 2040. It's 2400. Like
I
the
think
years.
It's 24th century, so 2300.
24. So it just seems pretty niche to have a 20th century historian on board a ship that has, what, like 900 staff members?
Yeah, 1,000 people about.
Can they not use that funding towards, I don't know, like a med bay pod like you see in Passengers or Prometheus or any other sci-fi places?
But there is no funding. There's no money. So, like, people can study whatever they want. Material goods are all provided for.
I mean, you know I'm a huge fan of the arts and history, but it just seems like maybe that's not the best spot for someone. Like, I don't know how often 20th century history is going to pop up in an open-ended space mission.
So, it's kind of this weird Star Trek thing where because they've got replicators, because they've got basically unlimited energy, they can provide for all physical needs.
Uh-huh.
And so now it's not about, you know, getting a job to be productive. It's more like following your own interests and pursuing your own path to like your best life. And for some people, that means joining Starfleet and going on adventures. For others, apparently, it means becoming a 20th century historian and getting shot by a holographic bullet later on.
Okay. Just, wow. So when the theater director said you could do anything with a theater degree, they weren't lying.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could join Starfleet someday.
I mean, this is part of the idealism of it, is like you can study whatever you want.
Yeah, I just was thinking maybe it would be more useful to have another resident on board given Crusher's track record. But okay, whatever.
So Picard and them run into this paper salesman on the street, like a newspaper salesman. And Picard wants to buy the paper, but he's got no money. But I guess the paper guy knows him a little bit. So he's like, it's fine for you, Dick. Catch me next time. This paper salesman, y'all might recognize him a little bit. He's a character actor. Where I recognize him from is he was the guy in Terminator, the first one, who sold the Terminator the guns. He's like, hey, just what you see, pal, when the Terminator asks for like a phase plasma rifle or whatever, right?
Right.
Yeah. If you check it out.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay. Just like that, like hard New York accent, just like cliche. Yeah, I could see that. Okay.
It's about like minute 1435 or so. You'll almost certainly recognize this guy from other movies too. Mm-hmm. He's a character actor. Anyways, so they buy the newspaper and they start reading through it and they're talking about Joe DiMaggio's like hit streak and stuff like that. And Data immediately starts spouting all these facts about how long the hit streak lasted for, when it was ultimately broken, and when it was like, you know, then trumped later on. And this newspaper guy is like freaked out by Data.
Yeah, and I wanted to know if this is like a Back to the Future-esque thing, like Back to the Future 2 specifically.
Yeah.
Can Data screw with the AI so much that like somehow it causes a breakdown in the holodeck because like it thwarts the future events?
No.
Okay.
Good question, though.
I was just waiting for one of them to like explode, like their mind to be like...
So we could talk about it a little later because it does get mind-blowing a little bit. And the newspaper guy is freaked out. He's like, where's this Data dude from? Where's your friend from, Dix? And they say he's from South America, which is maybe not the best cover.
Yeah, and at first I was like, wait, 1940s? That could work in like the late 1940s. But no, guys, this is early 1941 prior to Pearl Harbor. So this is like on the eve of World War II for the Americans.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So while they're on the newspaper, or while they're at the newspaper stand, a couple coppers. Wow, that was also pretty bad.
Cappers.
They come over and they see Dixon Hill or Picard there. Picard first sees in the newspaper that woman who came to his office was murdered or murdered. Wow, I'm doing bad.
This is fantastic, Dave. I love it.
Oh, my God.
10 out of 10.
And then as he notices that
she was moited.
The policemen come over and they see Dixon Hill and like, we're going to bring you downtown to talk. Because I guess they found that card on the woman's body that she, like the Dixon Hill.
The business card she took.
The business card.
Upon leaving, which she had to have used to get there in the first place.
Yeah, in the foist place.
In the foist place.
So like, what? It's so stupid. Anyway,
yeah.
So they take him downtown to talk, right?
Right.
And then at this point, we go back to the Enterprise, or our B plot, as I learned they are called now. And we see that, or we find out the Haradin are now probing the Enterprise, or like scanning them with this really intense like energy beam to like figure out what's going on. We see this like little purple circle move throughout the ship. Mm-hmm. And it's so intense, the ship actually does that little rocking thing. Like the camera shakes and like, whoa.
Yeah. And no one's ever seemed to be worried about radiation poisoning. Yeah. At some point, I'd be like, you guys, does anyone have a Geiger counter? I mean, we keep getting scanned all the time by these alien life forms. Yeah. Like, can we just double check we're not radioactive?
And so this scanning beam is, I guess, so intense, it seems to mess up a couple of the doors that go open and closing, and it actually screws up the holodeck. Mm-hmm. But they don't really notice this. We just kind of get the impression that the holodeck has gone awry. And the Haradin ask to bump up the time frame of the meeting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Riker says, like, you know, our captain's not here right now. I can fill in for him. And they're insulted by the fact they're talking to a mere subordinate. Mm-hmm. They're not going to go for it. They need to talk to Picard.
Which, again, I have another note. Why not Data?
Yeah. Well, I guess he's not there either, right?
Right, I know. But I mean, just get him out of the holodecks. They don't know at this point that the holodeck's like, just go grab Data. I don't know.
So then Riker asks Geordi, like, go down to the holodeck to find Picard. Why not just use the comlink?
Dave, I said that like the first couple episodes and you're like, I don't know.
Like, what the hell?
See, now you're getting my point. See, there's all these plot holes. Swiss cheese this episode.
So Geordi heads down to the holodeck, and our point of view shifts over to the holodeck entrance, where Crusher is now going into the holodeck, and she's also dressed up in period specific attire.
Right? Yes. And because she's Dr. Crusher, and Lord knows, the doors are very clearly malfunctioning. Now, a normal person, just not a doctor, a normal person would be like, huh, maybe I shouldn't go into this room where these doors are malfunctioning and don't seem to be sensing when my limbs are in the way. Not Dr. Crusher, y'all. Not Dr. Crusher. She just she just goes on in.
She's like, huh, the doors are malfunctioning.
Oh, well, it's fine, could be decapitated easily. I'll just go on in. Yeah. So she goes on in, but she's in her period, like, piece stuff. She's like, date night, Picard, the 40s, woo.
And when she enters in, she actually enters into a police station, right? Which is presumably where Picard and Waylon and Data have been dragged to.
Yes.
And she doesn't see Picard, but she sees Data, who is, he's just diving into this role.
Loving it.
So again, he's dressed in this period-specific costume, and he comes over to Picard, and he says, hiya, Doc, what's cooking? In this really over-the-top accent, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, what? Where's Captain Picard? And he's like, he's on ice. But again, Brent Spiner, such a good actor in these roles. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm like, you're nailing it. I would believe you're from South America. Be like, he's just got some weird, like, rare skin disease. No problem.
Yeah. And the Waylon dude, the historian, is also kind of, they're both getting really into it. They tell Crusher that Picard is being interrogated by the police because he's wanted for murder. And she's like, oh, fabulous. Like, they're all really kind of titillated by this experience.
They're psyched.
Being investigated by the police. And so it turns out, Picard is being interrogated. Mm-hmm. He also seems to be really enjoying it, right? When he's in the interrogation room, he's like, oh, you're doing a fantastic job talking to the cops. Like, great job, guys.
And they're doing like the good cop, bad cop thing.
Oh, he's just
like,
yeah. But while this is going on, we flash our point of view outside the holodeck. And it turns out as Geordi gets there, he can't get in, right? The door's not working for him. So they're stuck, right?
Right.
And so at this point, I had a couple questions.
Yes.
About this. So they need Picard. He's trapped inside the holodeck. I think they try their comms, but it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Why not transport him off?
Dave, why are you asking me this?
Well, so I hadn't seen this
Dave,
this
who
episode
am I?
In a couple years, or many, many years, actually. And like looking back at it now, like, just transport him off.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How did this Emmy Award receiving episode do something like have a freaking plastic water dispenser in the background?
What? Oh my God.
Yeah. And for all y'all saying plastic existed in the 1940s, yeah, it did, for injection molding purposes and in limited quantities because we were about to enter a world war. Plastic bottles, I don't think those were actually like popular until the very late 60s, early 70s. And even then it was the big ones. Yeah. The ones we're used to throwing out in mass, it's close to the late 70s. So I know my plastics history because that's actually a big deal with costuming because it's really hard to find real buttons that aren't plastic.
So this was a time point like 1933, 1930, when Crusher is sitting down next to I don't know if we ever get her name, but presumably she's...
Hot 40s lady.
a toots. Or I guess the implication is she's a sex worker. But
wait,
in the,
what?
Yeah.
Dave, she's just like a secretary.
I think the implication is that's why she's at the police station.
She could just be waiting. How dare you, sir?
Maybe she's waiting for a job interview to be a secretary at the police. But I think the implication is she's a sex worker.
Because she's got a feather in her hat?
Because she's dressed like kind of provocatively and like trying to get attention.
That's not provocative at all.
It's 1941.
That's not provocative for 1941.
But this is like a trope. When you go to police stations, there's like sex workers waiting there.
Or wives waiting to bail out their errant drunk husbands in the 40s.
Right. Well, we should check the credits and see.
Wow.
You didn't think that?
No, of course not. That's a very expensive hat.
Well, she's a successful sex worker.
Dave, I don't think you actually like know enough about costuming. No, no. For the 40s? And her shoulders are covered. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I don't really know much about...
No. Like, yes, I will agree that her hemline's a little bit high, but her cleavage is covered. Her shoulders are covered. She's wearing a very nice fascinator, which is like a fancier hat.
What's a fascinator?
It's a fancier hat. It's nicer than crushers.
It's called a fascinator?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. And it's like feathery and velvet and stuff. No, Dave, she's got more expensive jewelry on. Dave, she's not a hooker. Like...
Okay. All right.
I mean, if she is, then like, she's... No, she's not a sex worker, which is the more politically correct term. If anything, maybe she's married to like a billionaire.
Huh?
If you want to be like, she's a sex worker in that sense. But I mean, I think that's just a trophy wife.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can find the credits.
And I don't think that's really a sex worker. It's just a trophy wife. It's an exchange.
Well, let us know what you think.
No. So now you backed yourself into a corner. Let's hear. What was it?
I don't know. I couldn't find it in IMDb.
No. Like, why did you think she's a sex worker?
Because of the trope of like, always having sex workers in the police station being arraigned and stuff. But I guess there's no handcuffs. But I think a cop comes over later and gets her to like talk to her about stuff.
It could be for tax evasion. Boo, Dave!
It could be for tax evasion. But
boo.
Again, 1940s. Probably
boo.
Not.
You don't know that.
You're right. I did make an assumption.
You did make a baseless assumption.
Well, okay. Well, we'll see.
And also, Crusher imitates her, so... Hmm.
Yeah. But in the background of this scene with the sex worker and or person there to get her husband out of prison.
Possibly self-made millionaire. She could be a Vanderbilt for all you know.
All
there
right.
for
the
tax evasion,
Vanderbilt.
Dave.
In the background, we see a water cooler.
We do see a water cooler. And,
but
yeah.
Is it possible it's like a glass jug?
It's plastic.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's just from the sheen. I can tell it wasn't glass. It would have been made out of glass at the time.
Yeah.
They had glass water coolers. But no, that's plastic.
Huh.
Yeah.
Anyways, so...
Before you were shaming this poor actress who basically was like, I'm portraying a Vanderbilt. And her family's like, good for you. And then, you know, 30 years later, some random guy in a podcast is like, she's a sex worker.
So I guess for me, the main plot holes were, why not turn the power off on the holodeck and the whole simulation?
Yeah.
Or beam them out. Or worst case scenario, beam Geordi in there with like a communicator to talk to the Herat. There's so many possibilities, which they didn't touch on at all.
Yeah. Right? So I don't understand why you guys like have a holodeck to begin with. If this is a possibility where you can get trapped in one.
Yeah.
This seems like a pretty big plot hole. Again, Swiss cheese with this episode. But whatever.
So this will happen. We'll get to that later on. And so Riker heads down to the holodeck to kind of, you know, be the in charge guy on the scene. As he's leaving the bridge, Wes says, like, you know, I've read all the technical manuals. I can help. Riker says, no, it's okay. Geordi's got it. Your duty is here on the bridge. But Troy points out that actually Crusher, like Wes's mom, is also trapped. And so he probably wants to help. And so Riker's like, all right, come on, Wes, let's go down. So they go down to the holodeck.
So not only does Wes benefit from being a Nepo child, but now his mother's failed attempt to have a holodeck date with the captain allows him to go and help out LeVar.
Yeah.
So privilege is alive and real in Starfleet, people.
So back on the holodeck, Picard is answering a bunch of questions and the cops are doing their old good cop, bad cop thing, right? Mm-hmm.
And Picard says he has a lady to get back to.
Oh, yeah. He calls the lady Enterprise.
And I love the cop's response because he says, sounds like a working lady to me. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I have heard many a different name for a working lady. And I don't know in this case if he means that as a euphemism. I think he might because it's supposed to be the 40s.
Yeah.
Enterprise is not one of the names I've heard.
She's an enterprising lady.
Her name is Enterprise. He doesn't say she's an enterprising lady. He says Her name is Enterprise.
Yeah, I guess that's like having a sex worker named Business.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I guess you're getting from point A to point B. Is it, Transaction is my name.
Transaction.
Like, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I just love the cops, like, just not a single beat, like, sounds like a working lady. Like, he just said the name Darcy or something.
Yeah. Like, maybe he would have said that to anyone because he knows Dixon Hill loves prostitutes.
I guess. Classic Dick Dick.
So while Picard is being interrogated, we have this other scene where Crusher is like observing the
Vanderbilt heiress.
Vanderbilt heiress and or sex worker and trying to copy her like beautification ritual. It's not that funny. I don't know. Did you have?
I'm just still trying to see how you think she's a sex worker, Dave.
Because of the way she is dressed and the fact she's in a police
station.
She's
wearing pink.
And that because of the police like grabs her to like go talk to her about something.
I'm not saying this at all. She's dressed like what is considered pretty conservatively like fashion forward for the 40s.
You think so?
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. Okay. Yeah.
Well, perhaps.
Yeah, I have no idea. Right. Like she looks upper class.
Well, I'm looking forward to the credits.
Yeah. So
while Crusher's sitting there, like she gets hit on by one of the cops who offers her like a stick of gum, which she then like chews and swallows and then invites her to a dance. Which she kind of doesn't go in for. I don't know. She's just not, it's not compelling, let's say.
It's not compelling. And also, I was impressed she knew what to do with the stick of gum.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what if she, I don't know. I'm not sure my instinct would be to put something in my mouth.
Or to unwrap it and then put it in your mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
So outside the holodeck, Riker arrives on the scene with Wes. And immediately, Wes and Geordi get to work. They're like looking at the circuits with this little like eyeball scanning device, which we'd never, I think, see again ever. Mm-hmm. And Riker is just basically standing around. It's like you're trying to do something really complicated and your boss is just hovering over your shoulder the whole time.
To be fair, LaVar's doing the same thing too.
That's true. Yeah.
So it's like a triple layer. Like adult, tres leches cake where
the tres leches supervision
set.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Wes is just there with the
and the bottom
thing.
Leches doing all the work, carrying all the milk.
Both Geordi's staring at him and then Riker staring at Geordi staring at him.
It's quite silly.
Yeah. It's yeah. And also Wes is like 15 or whatever.
Yes.
It's just,
but he's had quite an episode learning about sex and cars.
So within the holodeck, Picard does get released. It turns out he's actually quite friendly with this cop who offers to bring over like a bottle of scotch and talk about it. And then Picard briefly gets a cigarette from this cop and tries it and does not like it. The cop also warns him to be careful of this Cyrus Redblock villain, mm-hmm. which is like the big bad that they're trying to deal with in the holodeck.
So this cop is like this fictional character that Picard is portraying as like BFF in this fictional universe, essentially.
That yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And he's also a sex worker, just from the way he's dressed.
Oh my God, Dave! That tie. That, so
it's,
promiscuous.
It's got some pink in it. So when Picard gets out of the interrogation box, we see Waylon, the history guy, is just like inspecting a lamp.
Cool.
Because he finds it super cool. Data's like staring at himself in a mirror, trying to get his look really down. Everyone's just really hamming it up. And Picard heads over to talk to Crusher, and he seems to be smitten by her in her period-specific outfit, which...
Yeah, which, okay, whatever you got to do to get there, Crusher, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, they do tend to, well, we'll see. No, I'm not going to give any spoilers.
I mean, like, this is just irritating. The will they, won't they? We know they're going to at some point. It's just irritating. And also, poor Wesley. I mean, I don't say this often, but geez, it's got to be like, just gross. Stop. Mom, stop.
You know who we don't see when we have this holodeck emergency?
What?
Is Chief Engineer Argyle.
Argyle.
Like, you'd think he'd be on site, ready to help.
Nah,
like he
he's
was
still
really
afraid
underused.
After what happened to Sing. He's like, I'm just going to stay on this Haven planet, you guys. Yeah. Extended leave. I have to do some engineering here.
That's right.
They have an engineering emergency.
Oh, they should have named one of their holodecks like the Sing Memorial Holodeck.
Yeah.
So then they decide to leave the police station, and now all four of them, Waylon, Data, Crusher, Picard, go back to Dixon Hill's office, largely because the other ones just want to check it out. Right?
And it's very unclear, but Crusher still really hates Waylon. Yeah. She like rolls her eyes at him. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, at first I thought it was because he was crashing the date, but she's fine with Data being there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's a little weird, but okay.
Yeah.
Like that third wheel's fine, but Waylon, screw that guy.
So when they get to the office, they see this guy, Mr. Leech, who was looking for Picard earlier, has been waiting for him the whole time. And Picard tries to blow him off because he wants to get out of the holodeck. At this point, obviously, they don't know they can't leave.
Right.
But Picard wants to get back to do the Haradan thing. But Leech pulls a gun on them and like is like, no, you got to stay here.
Right.
And all the people on there are like, this is super cool. They're like really enjoying.
They're super excited.
Yeah. They're putting their hands up like, oh, is this what we do? Oh my God, this is so much fun.
Yeah. And I had a question for you.
Yeah.
This Felix dude, did he play a Ferengi?
That's a good question.
Because he does like, he has a similar like tone. Like his pitch is very similar.
Yeah.
And so is his cadence of speech. And he has the right, like if he was like hunched over a bit, then stature wise, he'd be there as well.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if he was one of the first three Ferengi that we saw on that. Whatever it was, the third episode, I think.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because he definitely gives off a Ferengi vibe.
So the guy that plays Felix Leech is an actor named Harvey Jason.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look like on IMDb he's got any other credits for the Ferengi, but he was in Jurassic Park: The Lost World.
What?
Yeah, he played A.J. Sidhu, who I think might have been a lawyer or something in Jurassic Park.
The Lost World?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I have no idea. Well, now we got to go watch The Lost World after
that
this.
That sounds good.
All right.
So Felix Leech is holding a gun on them. They're all excited. As I said, they seem to be really enjoying it, smiling. And it turns out this Leech character is looking for some sort of item, right? Like this, I guess, is this the MacGuffin? Is that what it's called? Like the thing that propels the plot forward?
I mean, that could be, I don't know. It's an unspecified item.
Okay. Yeah. This is looking for this unspecified item.
Oh, now I'm going to look up MacGuffin.
So yeah, they're looking, or Leech is looking for this unspecified item. And they're refusing to help him at all. And at this point, like they all kind of sit down, they ignore his gun. They don't really take him seriously. And actually Waylon is kind of hamming in front of it. Some attitude, giving him an accent and all this kind of stuff. And then Leech shoots Waylon. And as soon as he shoots him, Dr. Crusher's first reaction is to applaud.
Oh, and I watched this like 7 times. I'm sorry.
So my first reaction when I saw that is like, one, what the hell? But then two, maybe she thought Waylon was diving, like taking a dive, and that's why she clapped?
I just assumed that she failed the first class she took in medical school, which like, it's like they gave her a multiple choice quiz and it's like someone gets shot. Do you A, help them, B, call for help, C, clap wildly? And she's like, oh, obviously, sir.
Yeah, she's a big fan of acoustic therapy.
She went to the Sackler Academy, guys. So she's like, ah.
So it turns out the bullet was real. He really got shot with a lead bullet. And then Crusher runs over and immediately like takes his shirt open to look at the wound and puts a napkin over it, which I guess if you got a snot-filled item, it's probably not great to rub that into a wound, but whatever.
No, Dave, so a couple things here. First off.
Oh, did you have thoughts on Crusher's treatment?
My thoughts, okay.
Yeah.
First off, yeah, so she runs over, like you said, unbuttons his shirt.
Yeah.
She just tosses a hanky on top of the bullet wound.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And is like,
no
he's
pressure.
Bleeding internally. No pressure at all on this wound.
It's probably a heavier handkerchief.
I guess so. And she does not apply any pressure. Yeah. There's very, very little blood. She doesn't think about like, you know, maybe keeping him warm, which is really important to do.
Well, that's not part of her therapy ritual.
But, you know, she was there to clap. So, but... She's like, oh, no, he's bleeding internally without, like, any examination. And then just, like, grabs his arm.
Yeah, I guess she's really looking for blankets to poorly cover him in blankets.
No, she doesn't even button up his shirt or cover him with a jacket. Like, that's one of the first things you should do. If someone's losing a lot of blood, you got to keep him warm. Like, this is just basic. Oh, my God, you guys, you should not be learning this from a podcast. But just basic first aid.
Next time you get shot on a holiday.
You get like stabbed or shot or whatever, apply a ton of pressure, like to the point where it's hurting the person to the wound.
Yeah.
I'm not a doctor, definitely not a doctor, but you keep it there, pressure down, right? And then you also keep the person warm. Okay. Because blood loss causes you to get cold and can like cause you to lose circulation in your extremities. It's very basic. You learn it in like the 2-hour CPR first aid course you take to be like a lifeguard or through Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts when you're like able to when you're in sixth grade. It's freaking stupid.
But I guess if they were to do that, they would cover up the fact, like for a camera point of view, that you couldn't see that he was bleeding.
You could if they actually showed her applying pressure to the wound instead of sitting next to him holding his arm, which let's hold his arm.
She does get him a pillow because he might have bumped his head when he fell.
Well, my favorite is she's holding his arm and through the jacket, she's his pulse is fading.
Yeah. I can't find a pulse.
Is it? So again, Dr. Crusher and her wildest medical moments.
So Picard really easily disarms Leech and scares him away, and he calls for the holodeck exit because they need to get this Whalen guy to sickbay where somebody else can treat him. And also so they've got proper medical technology, but the exit doesn't respond. And now they realize they're trapped in the holodeck and Whalen is bleeding out, right? So that's not ideal.
Not out, in, because there's no blood. He's bleeding internally. Again, a little surprising, strange medicine.
And outside the holodeck, we also have a time crunch in that the Haradan want to talk to Picard. So we've got these plot A and plot B. We're blah, blah, blah. We got to get going on both of them for things to happen. So at this point, as you say, Crusher says she's losing his pulse as she's feeling it through his jacket. She needs a little bit of light. So Data walks over to a lamp.
So she can see his sleeve better.
Yeah. So Data walks over to this lamp and starts walking it over to Crusher, and inadvertently, as he pulls it, pulls the plug out of the socket. And then he's like, what? The lamp stopped working. And he's kind of tapping on the bulb and turning around. And Picard, without missing a beat, grabs the empty the plug and plugs it back in. And then the lamp reignites and Data never notices Picard. Did you see this?
I did not, because I was just like, oh no, Crusher, maybe you should feel around the collar for the pulse.
You were just maybe
his outside pocket will have a pulse.
No, I thought this
I missed that entirely because I was just what are you doing, Crusher?
I thought this was a great bit of physical comedy that they really nailed. It's maybe not appropriate for the moment.
Yeah.
But the fact that they nailed it so flawlessly this early in the series, I just think they're both great actors.
Right? Yeah.
So yeah, this.
No, that is that. I completely missed that too, because I also was just what do you need more light for, Crusher?
It's great. He's looking at the light. Yeah. It's not working.
No, totally missed just because.
Oh, there, it's working now. It's great.
That is great.
Yeah. And so now at this point, when they've got the lamp and Crusher's poorly attending to Whalen, now enters Cyrus Redblock along with Mr. Leech and another henchman. Mm-hmm. Amara, did you recognize Cyrus Redblock?
No, but I did want to give a shout out to the costuming people.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was I bet there's going to be a hot mess of hats here. I really, yeah. I was one, because oftentimes when people try to do 40s era stuff, they just do a hodgepodge of a bunch of different hats from different eras. And they actually had everything in era appropriate.
Oh, yeah.
So we see a derby hat, which is appropriate, a Homburg, which was actually Winston Churchill's favorite kind of hat, and a Panama hat.
Wow.
So, as well as, did I say fedora? Yeah, fedora as well.
Wow. Yeah. So
a nice little buffet of hats.
And none of
them
get
dropped.
That
are all appropriate. Yeah. And none of them get dropped.
So the guy that played the big bad Cyrus Redblock.
The one with the bowler hat.
The bowler hat wearing guy. Mm-hmm. This is character actor Lawrence Tierney.
Oh.
So have you not seen him in stuff?
I don't know. I recognize that.
Okay. So this guy, he played in Seinfeld. He played Elaine Bennis's father, Alton Bennis, for one episode. Okay, that means nothing to you.
We talked about my lack of exposure to Seinfeld.
He was also in another episode of Deep Space Nine, where he played a bloodthirsty general.
Yes, Dave, because obviously I have experience with that prior to it doing a podcast called Star Trek.
This is for our listeners.
Oh, my God.
But where you might have seen him is in Reservoir Dogs, where he was the guy running the whole operation. And he has this classic line of, let's go to Wyke, and gets everyone ready to go.
I literally haven't seen any of those.
Okay. Wow. All right. I mean, I've seen this guy in so many things. Okay. Oh. Fine. Well, listeners, I hope you enjoyed that. So Cyrus reveals he is looking for something. He's looking for some item, and he sends his henchmen to kind of look around the office. Leech reveals to Cyrus that it was Picard who hit him a few minutes ago after Leech shot Whalen. Cyrus lets Leech pistol whip Picard.
Which I was like, I'm sorry. I thought it was kind of preemptive retaliation by shooting Whalen. So why do you don't get to shoot someone and pistol whip someone when someone's only slapped you or hit you?
That seems a bit over the top.
It did not seem fair.
Yeah. And also after Leech hits him with the tip of his pistol, they've got really bad makeup for the blood. It just looks like kind of ketchup. It looks kind of like the lipstick.
It does look like lipstick. And also Picard recovers like a champ. He's just psh. And I also was wondering what would happen if they pistol whip Data. Would the gun bend?
Probably not. I think like the guy would just lose his grip on it, maybe.
Oh.
Yeah, because okay. It's kind of like whipping it against a wall.
That's what I was trying to figure out. And I'm like, yeah. That would have been cool.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't... I mean, they use Data's physicality a little bit in this, but not
that much.
Too much, yeah. Anyways, so then the next character to arrive on this growing scene is actually Picard's cop friend, who turns up with a bottle of scotch. Again, the sex worker cop.
With that just ridiculously floozy tie.
And so as they talked amongst themselves, so amongst Cyrus and his henchmen, and Picard, Crusher, Data, Waylon's kind of out of it, mm-hmm. Cyrus really becomes fixated by Data. Like, who is this dude, right? Mm-hmm. And Data says, well, essentially, I'm from South America, right?
Yeah.
Cyrus isn't really buying this, mm-hmm. But at this point, Picard sees this as an opportunity to kind of get them out of this desperate situation. And he makes a very bold gambit, which is to tell Cyrus, actually, he's not from South America. We're from a completely other world where we have fabulous riches. Like, I'm not Dixon Hill. We're from this other place. And he's really trying to entice Cyrus to drop the search for this mysterious item and go to this other world, mm-hmm. which that's quite a swing.
It is, but when you look like Data, you might just pull it off.
I mean, one thing they could have done to really convince Cyrus of this, I didn't think about
is
this.
Is pistol whip Data and see how nothing happens.
Or just like pull back some of Data's skin.
That's really where I thought this was going.
Because he'll have all his electronic shit under it.
Literally where I thought this was going.
That would have been a lot easier.
Yeah.
Or you just have Data do some feat of strength or something like that.
Or imitate Cyrus.
Yeah. Many, many options. But Cyrus really isn't going in for this idea that there's a completely other world.
Right? Yep.
So they're Picard's next gambit.
I would say the next thing that I noticed is that they just can't decide what time of day it is.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you look out the windows, it just is like sometimes it's daytime, sometimes it's nighttime. And supposedly, I think this is supposed to take place in San Francisco.
Oh, is it?
It does not look like San Francisco.
Oh, you're right. San Francisco.
It's New York.
Yeah. It looks like Chicago, New York.
It looks like a back lot that's supposed to look like New York or Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not San Francisco. And again, it's sometimes it's daylight, sometimes it's raining, sometimes it's not, sometimes it's nighttime. So that part was pretty inconsistent, but can't win them all.
I mean, I guess the holograph or the holodeck is malfunctioning, so maybe it's that.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, because you're seeing people who are Vanderbilts as floozies, so clearly the holodeck must be malfunctioning.
So Picard, as I said, tried to convince Cyrus and his henchmen that there's a whole other world filled with fabulous riches that they come from. Cyrus doesn't go for this. Picard's next gamble is to tell them, you're actually not real. You're a simulation.
Nice.
And also, Cyrus doesn't go in for this either.
Right. And at this point, I'm like, can someone just ask him what the goddamn item is? Like, really, what if it's like a red bowler hat? This guy loves bowler hats. Yeah. Let's just take a wild leap. And maybe like Crusher can go out and buy a red bowler hat. No problem. Bring it back. We're good.
Or just synthesize one if the holodeck was working.
Or that.
So Cyrus decides to test this theory that there's another world and that they're not real by killing one of the crew. It's unclear to me exactly how this is a test of this theory.
Yes.
I think he's just trying to get Picard to reveal where the item is by threatening to kill somebody. And so Redlock decides, orders Mr. Leech to kill the woman, right? Which is killing Crusher.
Which makes absolutely no sense.
No sense.
Because the entire premise of this like character, this Redlock dude, is that he's supposed to be like, oh, I'm like a gangster gentleman. And also this is typical for the 40s. Just like you would not actually attack a woman. Especially one in like decent social standing.
That's true.
So if we're talking about like a lady of the evening, like you're mentioning before, then obviously they wouldn't have the same social standing and they would be treated horribly.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about someone who just looks like fairly middle class, is just there, that's not going to be the primary target. That would have been seen as extraordinarily shameful by like any number. I mean,
this
you
want to
talk about different crime
era.
Things going on in like 1940s, name like a different ethnicity that you want to associate with crime. That would be considered extremely shameful. There's no crime group that would do that.
Yeah, this is the classy gangster era. They're not going to do that.
I wouldn't say classy, Dave, but I would say there were things that they just did not do. And killing women and children were not one of the things that they immediately jumped to.
Yeah.
Not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying if there's men in the room, they're going to go after them first.
Yeah. So when we return from a commercial break, Picard says to Cyrus, you know what? Actually, I do have the item. But first, I have to explain something before I can give it to you. And Picard says that he will explain the situation and potentially give up the item if Cyrus can help save the Waylon, the historian guy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, we jump back to our B plot with the Haradans. Here again, Riker is trying to buy time with them, but they're not going for it. But we do learn that Wes and Geordi have potentially a solution.
Yes, we do. We see something else happen, which is the cop buddy of Picard's character in the primary plot. Like his buddy who's like, ah. So he came by the office, right? And he's seeing all these like the gangsters there and he's holding them for himself. He gets punched by one of the henchmen in the head and he falls to the ground gripping his jaw. And it's like, oh no, it's very obvious. And it's like his hat must have had like a chin strap support that caused some jaw ache. But it's very awkward because it's like a slap where the person turns the wrong direction.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. We have a later punch that's also not very good.
Yeah. This is like, I would say like original Star Trek level fighting scenes in this one.
It's not great. So it looks like Wes and Geordi have a solution. It's unclear what the solution is. There's no scientific description. They say essentially it could work, but if they're wrong, it will vaporize everyone inside the holodeck.
And Wesley says this like a serial killer. Yeah. Not a serial killer, sorry, a sociopath. He's like, oh, I might vaporize my mom. No problem. Yeah. He doesn't even mention his mom. He's just like, dude, it's fine.
Yeah. There's no consideration that it's his mom in there.
Yep.
He's so detached. And then Riker says like, all right, well, do you need more time to study the problem? And then they say, well, whether we do it now or later, the risk is the same. Like, no emotion.
Okay. And I have a huge question. Yeah. So this is not the only holodeck.
Yeah.
Riker says holodeck 12 early in the episode.
12?
Yes. So there's different holodecks. All right. And we know that from the first episode, there's different holodecks.
Yeah.
Because they said holodecks plural.
I thought there's only supposed to be three. I didn't know.
I have
said
no
12.
Idea. Oh, yeah, but maybe it's deck 12. The point is there's multiple holodecks, Dave. Yeah. And I rewound it because I was like, what the hell? So they're like, oh, well, no matter what we do, the outcome's going to be the same. Yeah. False, you stupid bitches. Go to the other holodecks and try stuff with some organic material. Like, I know you're like ultra vegan and you don't want to kill anything, but maybe sacrifice a cactus just to see if your captain will live if you try doing this thing.
Yeah.
You know, like recreate, do some science. Don't be like, well, no matter how much time we take, it'll end up being the same outcome. Because that's like very anti-science. And what the hell? You have two other, at least, holodecks to experiment with?
Yeah.
What answer was that?
So it is possible that the error is unique to this one because this one was running at the time they were scanned.
Yeah, possibly. But they could still try to recreate it with the cactus.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Just that's to say idea. Like, oh, point blank, no, this is not open-ended.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, we're all going to trust the 15-year-old on this?
Or again, beam them off.
Or just number of things. But number one would be, oh yeah, we've spent 20 minutes on this problem. There's no possible way we could fix it. And by the way, the chief engineer is just gone.
Yeah.
Let's trust his 15-year-old. And no offense, but LeVar. and not try to replicate it somewhere else.
And so Riker is just like, do it. Like, no Riker's consideration. Like,
he's like, I could be
kill,
captain.
Like, five people.
That's what I'm like. Is everyone like secretly like a sociopath? And Wesley's like, I'll inherit my mother's fortune. And LeVar's like, I'll become second in command. And Riker's like, I shall be the captain.
There's no sense of consequence.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. So they do it. And it briefly turns the holodeck into a winter storm before turning it back into like regular time.
Disagree. I thought they were in a shredder.
A shredder?
Like a giant human? It's an office shredder.
They've just been transported into a paper shredder?
You can't convince me that was even like an attempt at fake snow. It's very clearly like shredded paper. Like someone literally ripped up a piece of paper. They didn't even shred the paper. It's just like, what? So you guys ran out of money in the last minute? Like,
oh yeah, because once they go into this, I think winter storm attempt, after the storm passes and they're back to like regular simulation, the snow doesn't melt, right? It's on people's shoulders and stuff.
Oh yeah, and by the way, God forbid anyone's trying to help Waylon this entire time.
Yeah.
Like literally the only thing that's happening is Crusher's like sitting next to him. No one's trying to like do anything to help him.
Well, I mean, you know, if we lose a 20th century story, it's not the end of the world. It's not like a Sing. But the holodeck does get repaired, and so they open up an exit, and Picard tells them, like, look, outside here is the other world. Here's our riches. And, like, that's pretty convincing evidence when you see a doorway appear in the middle of a wall. Right?
And they all look stupid because they have these giant pieces of paper that are shredded on their shoulders, and it looks like they have massive dandruff. And then magically it disappears in the next scene.
And so Picard tells him, like, you wait here. We'll like bring the historian, we'll save the historian, and we can bring you your prize or whatever after. Cyrus doesn't go for this. He says, no way, he's going to go out there first. And so he and Mr. Leech get ready to leave the holodeck, but Data tells him, you know, if you go out there, you'll die. That will destroy you. Cyrus doesn't buy it. He and Leech walk off the holodeck, and as they get off, they start to like vanish, right? They slowly disappear from their legs up, kind of like Back to the Future a little bit.
Right. But what I love about this is that there's this door, right? Like they can get back.
Yeah.
They can, and they're having this wonderful discussion, and Waylon's just dying. Yeah. And it's like, can one of you shout out the door, hey, we need like a stretcher, or no, hey, one of the overworked residents, can you please wake up and come do Crusher's job for her?
Also, how come you don't see Data, or sorry, Geordi and Wes? They're outside the door.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. There's just, again, Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
Like, but really, no one gives a crap about Waylon.
I didn't think about that. But yeah, they should be right there waiting.
Like, someone should be there.
Yeah.
Like, and also just, again, they have a discussion and the door's right there and everyone's just like calm as Teen Waylon's like, I'm dying. Oh my God. And he's like freezing to death / bleeding out because Crusher's like.
Well, he doesn't have a blanket on at this point.
I mean, he's probably dead because she checked the pulse on his jacket and couldn't feel anything. But like. Literally, like, Picard even is just like, well, let's talk about it, and you can see if the world is real, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, Picard, come on. Can someone show some consideration for the dying man? Like,
so at this point, Data, like, so Cyrus and Leech are dead, basically are vaporized.
Yeah.
So Data neutralizes the other henchman. He grabs the gun, squeezes the barrel closed, and then gives him a really terrible TV punch, right? So that guy's out.
Yep.
And then he picks up Waylon and carries him to sickbay.
Yeah, which probably exacerbates his injury, by the way he picks him up. Yep. I'm like, cool. Because again, no stretcher ready. No one really. They had 5 minutes to discuss all that with the door open, but no time.
But then we have this really weird conversation with between Picard and the cop friend.
You say weird. I say cruel.
Yeah. Where the cop friend is like, so I don't exist? Like when you leave this universe, am I going to cease to exist? And like my wife and kids, what happens to them? Like this simulation is apparently gaining self-awareness, or at least pretending to be self-aware, simulating self-awareness.
Yeah.
Which is really bananas. And you know, he asks Picard, like, when you leave, will I ever see my wife and kids again? And Picard's like, honestly, don't know.
Yeah. He's
peace.
Like, I don't know. He's like, oh no, if your wife or kids are dead, imaginary friend, bye.
Yeah.
Just leaves. Yeah. The guy's like, my life's a lie.
Yeah. So this really, because again, as I mentioned, I haven't seen this episode in years. When we have later holodeck things, the characters are written in such a way, like they're coded in such a way that they cannot be made aware of the fact they're simulations.
Thank God, because this is horrifying. I was like, this just went Black Mirror.
Yeah, it really did.
Like, so fast.
Yeah. And I guess there's a whole philosophical question of like, are they simulating self-awareness or are they actually self-aware? We'll get into it a little bit later with some other episodes. Anyway, so ultimately Picard makes it to the bridge. He arrives still in period costume. He does his Haradan greeting. He nails it and the bridge crew cheers, you know, which is great. We never hear if Waylon made it or not. We never see him again.
Yeah.
But this is the kind of end of the episode, but before, you know, we set course for more diplomatic engagement with the Haradan. Mm-hmm. Picard sits on his little command chair and he tells Mr. LaForge, set course, blah, 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 step on it. Instead of engage, he does that terrible accent.
Yes, and Data tries to join in and also like use some vernacular. And Picard's like, that's enough, Data!
Yeah, only I can like, do this.
It's like, okay, first off, Data's doing it better because his accent's better. Yeah. And second off, like, you just destroyed your fake best friend's life psyche and like caused an existential crisis to happen in the holodeck.
This kind of reminds me of, I think it was a Simpsons episode when they do like a spoof of Conan O'Brien, who says like, you know, sit perfectly still. Only I may dance, right? It's like, oh, yeah. Picard's like, only I may do the accents.
That's honestly how I feel like all the time for Data, because Data's so good at like all the things.
Yeah.
And Picard and Riker are constantly shutting him down. And I'm like, you guys don't need to be so visibly jealous of Data.
You know what'd be awesome?
It makes you look petty.
As if Data was adopted by Dr. Crusher so he could get the nepotism benefit.
Oh my God, yes, please. Make that happen. Which, by the way, I actually wrote my own little afterword for what happened to Waylon.
Oh yeah.
Of course I did.
Nice. Let's hear it.
All right. So Waylon was rushed to Medical Bay, where a resident quickly cleared Crusher away as she was throwing tissues at him wildly and not actually tending to his wound.
Yeah.
And a second resident distracted her with a shiny ball while the third one actually tended to the bullet wound and lead poisoning. Waylon lived, but went on to transfer to the SS Fearless.
Nice. Yeah, that would be awesome.
And then I wrote Data for Captain at the very end. Yeah.
So, Amara, did you have any overall thoughts about this episode?
Well, okay, first off, I really appreciated that the hats were accurate. Yeah. I can't emphasize that enough because people are really weird with hats in like historical dramas and stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, I actually did have a note that the costumes were awesome. I expected to go into it when I saw the thumbnail just lampooning the crap out of costumes because people tend to mix up 50s and 40s attire quite a bit. But no, it was, I thought they were like pretty great.
Yeah.
A lot of the accessories were on point. There were very few anachronisms that I could see, at least, and I was definitely looking for them. Like I was like really smug when I saw the plastic water bottle thing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
and then I also just don't think they understand that pistol whipping really messes up your face and hurts a lot.
Yeah, it doesn't just give you a lipstick mark.
Yeah, like they really don't seem to understand, like I don't understand the training that goes on at Starfleet, and if they don't actually do a hands-on approach, like it's all like sparring, but from like a foot away, so no one actually ever touches anyone else, because so far their fighting has been very worrisome to me.
Yeah, it's
including Worf's, who's supposed to be like this great fighter. And then like the pistol whip, I was like, is that like a pistol made of like rubber or something? Like, so yeah, there's that. Yeah, a little weirded out that everyone was so chill about possibly killing like half of the crew.
Yeah.
Including Wesley about his own mother.
Yeah.
No one wanted to try to back it up with experiments on the other holodecks. Also weird. But yeah, we're all pretty good. Wanted to know why Crusher really hates Waylon from the beginning. She just really hated him off the bat.
I guess he's horning in on her potential date.
But so was Data, and she had no problem with him. And later on, when it was Data, her, and Waylon, and Picard, she was still like shaking her head and glaring at Waylon for no reason.
I feel like Data's like a neutral entity.
Oh.
Right?
I guess so. I don't know.
Because like he won't judge a date the same way like another human who's had romantic relationships would be like, oh, I see what you guys are doing. Like,
I mean, so far the only person we've seen get laid really was Tasha and Data, so we don't know.
Well, I guess Data's more like going on a date with a computer. It's like having Siri on your date, right?
I guess. I don't know. I just think he's the most eligible bachelor of all of them. So. Oh,
don't get me wrong. I love Data.
We all love Data, Dave. Get in line.
So would it surprise you to know that one, this was nominated for two Emmys? As I mentioned, one for costume, which it won.
Yeah, I could see that.
And then also one for outstanding cinematography from a series.
That one, what the fudge?
Yeah. So that's like, just nominated, but yeah.
Who were the other contenders?
I don't know.
Like a dog carrying a camera? Like, I'm sorry. I don't want to be a jerk, but like they couldn't even get the lighting consistent outside.
So what also really surprised me.
Yeah.
This also won a Peabody Award.
For?
I don't remember.
Okay.
But like this, I think it's the only Star Trek episode to win a Peabody Award.
Huh.
For which I think you're supposed to be for like imaginative and creative storytelling in film and movies or film and TV.
That's surprising because this plot actually really sucked.
Yeah. But I think why they won it was because the holodeck, like the notion of the holodeck opens up so many possibilities.
I could see that in the fusion of the sci-fi 40s. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, having watched the series and all the other series, like this technology plays a big role in many of them and they do some really cool things with it in the future.
Mm-hmm.
This one sucked, right? They did not really, like it's a cool premise, but they didn't really flesh it out. I guess the rules are still unclear compared to later versions. So in my mind, it's like one of the worst examples of the holodeck gone wrong storyline.
Yeah.
But it was also the first example of the holodeck gone wrong storyline. So I think on that count is why they may have maybe got the Peabody.
But a holodeck, like, I don't know. So Tron came out before this, right?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know when Tron came out, actually.
I'm pretty sure Tron came out before this.
Okay.
Before 87. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I think there's other sci-fi or horror films that had the notion of something like a holodeck before. Yeah. But I guess like integrating it in a way where it's, I guess, better depicted is a big thing. And then also, just the storyline though, there was no clear objective. The ending was like really I feel like with a lot of these episodes, Dave, it feels like they get to the 40-minute mark and they're like, oh shit, we got to wrap this up in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it felt this way It felt that way with this one.
The pacing was definitely weird.
Just all of a sudden, it's just like, what if you didn't exist?
Yeah.
And then the gangsters are like, oh, yeah, I'm going to have an existential breakdown.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, that was quite a swing.
The what? What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just so that part, it does feel really rushed with a lot of these episodes, like right at the end.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. And I hope the pacing gets a bit better in other episodes. But yeah, I mean, like, I liked it. I thought it was cool. And I love the costuming. It is a nice change from the freaking bodysuits. And also, what other episode were they going to be nominated for the costuming, to be honest?
Like, so. I don't know, because their costuming, well, I guess we'll see in
the
later.
The Ferengis. I mean, I loved it, but I could see how the Academy would be snooty against it.
But in the later seasons, their makeup and stuff gets so much better, right?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. But we all know that, like, the industry's pretty biased against sci-fi.
Mm,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unless there's an actual sci-fi category, fantasy and sci-fi has been long and horror been long overlooked.
Yeah. Well, we'll see a lot cooler examples of the holodeck gone awry stories in the future. I think in season two, there's a really good one.
Why would they ever use it again if there's a potential that you can be killed in the holodeck?
That's a great question, because it's amazing, I guess would be the answer. yeah. Oh, they do introduce later on the concept of the holodeck safety.
So, oh, later. That's good.
Yeah. Like, I guess presumably it existed now, but right. You can turn the safeties on such that when you get hit or like shot, it doesn't actually cause any damage.
So it wasn't on for this episode?
Apparently not. It might have been that the glitch removed the safety.
Okay. So that seems like a big problem. Mm. And remember how in the first episode you made fun of me because I was like, the turbo lift's going to decapitate people. And you're like, no, no, no. The real one definitely has sides.
Yeah.
This case in point. OSHA, again, where are they? Where are they for Starfleet?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you can turn the safety off might be a problem.
I feel like I have the same 6 points every episode and we've yet to like disprove them.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yep. But yeah, no, I mean, it was fun. It was fun. Hopefully Waylon makes it. We never find out.
Yeah, I think Waylon and Sing are hanging out somewhere at Haven.
Oh, I hope so. Sing deserved better. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. But yeah, it was entertaining. And once again, guys, if you ever encounter a Dr. Crusher in your life, run. All right? And if you get hit with a bullet, don't let her touch you. She's just going to like take the pulse on your jacket. All right? Yeah. And she'll probably be like, he's dead. While you're like, please, I'm definitely alive. I just cut my knee.
So that was it for The Big Goodbye, which was, again, not one of my favorite ones from season one. But
yeah.
Our next episode, I believe, Data Lore.
Yeah.
I think that's one of my favorite ones from season one. But, you know, I haven't watched in a couple of years, so we will see.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah, yeah. You can understand the t-shirt that I wear.
Yeah, which says, trust data, not lore.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I get in the whole, like, you know, lore versus data if we're talking about the actual terms. But yeah. Mm-hmm. So, hooray.
And I believe next time I might even introduce our first segment.
Which is?
I don't know if I should tell you now or not. I guess I'll tell you.
No, wait till the episode.
All right.
I understand it.
Yeah.
Because I might not understand it now.
Yeah, good point. All right.
All right.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode a lot more than we enjoyed watching it. And
hey, I liked it.
We'll talk to you next time.
All right. Sorry. Hold on. Let me do my game. Hey, I liked it.
Was that your 40s accent?
I got a magazine for you. He's got the JoJo and DiMaggio.
Oh,
my God. That was terrible. I'm sorry. She's got a nice pair of legs on her.
There we go.
There we go. You like that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that all, Mr. Dick?
Oh, God.
That was terrible. Bye now.
Thanks, all you, for listening this
Thanks
far.
Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time.
Oh, God.
You all have a wonderful pair of legs on ya.
I'm just going to turn my mic off.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.